The documentary maker and author John Safran revels in the darkness and complexity of life. In his new book, Depends What You Mean by Extremist, he spends time with Indonesian Islamophobic preachers, controversy-hunting gym owners, and white Islamic State wannabes to try to understand topics like racism, Islamophobia, and what it means to be an extremist in this changing world. He joined me when he was in Adelaide for a chat. Now, you've built a career on spending time with people with extreme views and beliefs, but in the new book, you begin to question whether your beliefs go far enough. Has writing this book changed you?
Well, there was writing the book. It definitely made me really frantic when I was in it, when I was researching, because I'm hanging out with all these extreme characters and they're texting me and Facebook messaging me night and day, and they're all trying to convince me that the other side doesn't have my interests at heart. You know, like, for instance, you got the far right people and they're like, John, you know, the Muslims are going to kind of, they hate the Jews. And then you have the left going, oh, you know, John, you know, the far right, after they get through the Muslims, they're going to go to the Jews. And like, everyone's like in my ear, like trying to freak me out. And then the book's published, and it's kind of, the good side is, like, I really wrote this book when I was in a real hectic state of mind. But since it's been published, I've had time to kind of decompress a bit and like hang out with normal people, like the people down at the cafe and stuff. And so then I'm like, oh, okay. So I learned things, but I didn't learn the obvious things. Like it's not like, oh, and then I decided to become a neo-Nazi. Then I decided to join ISIS. It was
that
more,
just naturally happened.
Yeah, it was more, I learned these lessons such as, like, people are just such go-getters and they're the ones who are going to win. So it was a bit like a bit of a weird TED talk for me. Like, I was really impressed how all these radicals from different sides would just get shit done. So like the anarchists and the socialists who have got a reputation like, oh, they're just pulling cones and sleeping in or whatever. They've got this network that anytime, any place, anywhere, they can just press a button on their text and get like 200 people to turn up anywhere. At a drop of a hat. And then you had the United Patriots Front, who rather than bumbling about talking shit on the internet, they're like, you know, getting flags printed out up and sort of coming out to the streets. And so it was just kind of pretty impressive. Good work ethic. Yeah. And then so I just thought, like, I just have to, like, for instance, just write this book. Like, don't worry, just go full throttle. And I just realized it, like, you can't be a bumbling little nebbish who's sort of like, Papa, I'm going to listen to everyone and try to be fair and blah, blah. Because no one else out there who's, like, trying to shift the world is trying to be fair. Like, they're deciding what they need and they're going full throttle.
I was surprised to read about the nuances of anti-immigration group Reclaim Australia, how some of them are from multicultural backgrounds and yet they reject the idea of a multicultural society, instead favouring monoculturalism and assimilation. There's a lot of interesting contradictions and nuances within these groups, aren't there?
So I think, like, the sappy lefty crowd that listen to Radio Adelaide and stuff, their explanation for why there's a multicultural presence, like non-white presence at these far-right rallies would be, oh, they're trying to suck up and be like white people and it's the white patriarchy or whatever. But there's definitely a big element to it where these people just have, they just think differently. That not everyone thinks like you. And so, for instance, if you're an evangelical Christian and you're a new immigrant to Australia, that's really going to form your choices and how you think about things. So you might think Islam's a spiritual danger because you're full-on evangelical Christian, and it's sort of, that's that. Probably in Australia in general, like, we just dismiss religion as a motivating factor. Like, it's like, we just don't believe, like, if an ISIS supporter says, oh, listen, the scripture says the messianic age is approaching and I have to go fight because that's how I read the scripture. Like, we kind of don't believe them. We're going, oh, but it's really because you feel, like, marginalised because of unemployment or something. And it's And just people I've hung out with, like, religion's just super important to them, and scriptures, and they fall under the spell. It's a bit like you know, like, if there's, like, a Scientologist or something, and we kind of get that as a broader community. We go, oh, I get it. People get brainwashed, and they do things, and they're just not thinking like we think. And we kind of get it if there's, like, a loopy evangelical Christian talking about hell and hellfire, and you get it, and we kind of get that. But then, with all these other things, we sort of don't seem to understand that, like, no, there's kind of like a Muslim version of that too, of, you know, of a person who just is brainwashed and under the spell of these kind of books.
Yeah, right. Do they know that they're extremist?
Oh, what's really funny, I wish I put this in the book, is like in Melbourne particularly, but I'm sure everywhere, is like everyone's like trying to be kooky and quirky and like, oh, I'm interesting. Look at my hipster beard. I'm interesting. I have a vinyl record collection. And anyway, so you've got that going on in Melbourne, but then you have all these people who are truly like radical and strange, deeply, deeply, and they all think they're normal. So that they do not think... They think they're normal. Everyone thinks they're normal, and they're so not normal, whatever else you want to say about them. And it's almost like baffling. Like in the case of Pastor Daniel Nalia, who was like one of the leaders that would get up on the microphone during Reclaim Australia, and he's a Sri Lankan immigrant but a big evangelical Christian. And, you know, he thinks when there's a bushfire, he talks about how that's because we supported abortion or homosexuality. So he's like full on. And he has no idea that, because in his mind, because he only immigrated like in the late 90s, so he doesn't understand that Australia's not like that. Like even like cause in his mind, it's like, oh, Australia is Christian and white Australians are Christian. And so I'm like them. And so I'm normal. And it's like, no, it's like, that's not what even regular, you know, that's not normal. You know, whatever else it is, it's sort of like, that's not normal. And the fact that he would get in fights with Barnaby Joyce, who's like an archetype Aussie, you know, and Barnaby Joyce would take the mickey out of him because, you know, Pastor Daniel would say, oh, bottle shops are strangleholds of Satan. And like, Barnaby Joyce would just, like, laugh at him and stuff like that. Like, that shows how he's not a normal Australian, and yet bizarrely he just doesn't get it.
And a lot of people who are clearly quite racist get really offended when you call them racist.
Yes, it is a bit like it's the far right version of just being triggered. And you know how you have to use the right pronouns or whatever, or everyone just collapses in a heap or whatever.
Snowflakes.
They're snowflakes. Yeah, it's like you just have to, they get so offended. And I couldn't believe I was starting to work around and trying not to offend them. Like, so as a white supremacist, no, I'm a white nationalist. I'm not a white supremacist. I can't even.
Not like, to mention calling them a Nazi.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it's like, they just want you, they're so sulky. It's like, I can't believe they're so offensive. It's like people in your life, I'm sure we've all got them in our lives, people who you just cannot believe are so obnoxious, yet so brittle. Like, I get being brittle. Like, if you're, like, polite and everything and soft, that's fine. Be brittle. But I just cannot believe. They're, like, your most annoying relative, but an entire movement of, like, people who are so offensive. And say, there's one dude I'm thinking of who just posts such offensive stuff all the time about people in the public eye and stuff. But he's, like, so brittle if anyone says anything back. And yeah, and so these white nationalists are like, I'm not a white nationalist. I'm a nationalist who just
happens to be white.
Yeah, and believes that white Australians are my people. And so I'm like, oh, God, do I have to, yeah, I really have to snowflake you, don't I?
Love it. Was it interesting to meet people who've drastically changed their minds?
There was a bit of that where people who 10 years ago probably wouldn't have been accepted by the side they were on. So the other example of that is Ralph Italian surname man, who is now sort of like prominent in the far right and considered, you know, it's a white nationalist movement. And then I went to him because of his Italian surname, and I'm like, because 10 years ago at the Cronulla riots, it was International Leb and Wog Bashing Day. And so it was like, hang on, 10 years ago, would you have been not allowed to be on the side you are now because you were too unwhite and you were a quote-unquote wog? And but then it became even more interesting because I found out he said his mum was Aboriginal and so his father was Italian, and somehow he was still a white nationalist. Oh, and he's also married to a Vietnamese woman.
Oh, wow. And he also said as well, didn't he, that whenever he does those tests online to figure out if you're left or right wing, he said he always comes up as left wing and it really irritates him because he sees himself as right wing.
Yeah, he sees himself as right wing, but because on those tests, there will always be something about Indigenous rights, and because he supports Indigenous rights, like that tips him over into left-wing according to the online surveys. But yeah, people's race changed as soon as they like converted. The dude you're talking about there who converted to Islam, he was like, Oh, I started wearing the gear. Like, because often converts, they kind of get into the dress-ups a lot more. Like, if you're just born Muslim in Australia, you're just, like, wearing jeans and shit.
Mm.
But if you convert, it's like you go to full theatre or something. It's like, oh, yeah, I wear this, the head wrap and the thawb, which is like a robe. And anyway, so he just said he'd be walking around. He's such this white guy. And he'd be like, and people would scream out, oh, go back to Baghdad, and even call him a quote-unquote an abbo. And so, yeah, he just got, like, his whole race changed just because he presented himself as Muslim.
Mm. In a lot of ways, I feel like there seems to be a public acceptance of more racism because of things like the re-rise of Pauline Hanson, Donald Trump getting elected, Brexit, all these things culminating where our leaders are sort of making it appropriate for us to act in these ways. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a layer to it. In my book, because I really love blaming regular people for the world rather than blaming authority. So in my book, because what you say is true, but there's also this other way to it where the people create Pauline Hanson as opposed to Pauline Hanson is like responsible for the people. So in this book, I kind of talk about, I show how these people on the fringes just kept on, they'd say these things that you can't say in the mainstream, and they just say it so often for so long, and sort of like on the edges of things, like you can't go on ABC radio and say what the United Patriots Front say, but you can say it on the internet, on their pages, and it just got like, has this creep effect where suddenly you can say it in the mainstream. So they kind of like soften the public's ears. Does that make sense? Like, yeah they like soften everyone up. So you've heard it so much on the internet that suddenly when Pauline says it on regular television, it kind of doesn't seem as offensive as it would if she just said it raw. And she also, like, uses these people. Like, Pauline Hanson, it was interesting how there was a dude, the guy I was talking about before, Pastor Daniel Nalia, and he's anti-Islam, but mainly for, like, scriptural reasons and spiritual reasons. Like, you know, he thinks the Christian Messiah is about to come, and he's been anointed by God to try to warn Australia about in Islam or whatever. So he somehow hooks up with Pauline. So Pauline, like, doesn't know anything about Islam or the Quran, because she was still banging on about the Asians. And then they somehow hook up, and he sort of, like, feeds her, like, the quotes from the Quran that she can then sort of, like, say in public, which then becomes, like, really interesting, because then it becomes everyone's talking about Islam as a religion. You have the regular devout Muslims who are just, like, you know, like, oh, no, I'm Muslim because it's my religion. Then you have, like, ISIS people, like radicals, and it's religion for them. And then you've got the far right, like, and they're defining Islam as a religion and talking about the Quran and everything. And then there's, like, the Radio Adelaide lefties, and they're the only ones who aren't talking about it as a religion for, like, better or worse, because it's like, oh, no, it's an ethnicity and, you know, like... And so, yeah, they're kind of, like, left out of the conversation.
Mm.
It's weird how, out of all these radicals and extremists, I seem to be blaming Radio Adelaide listeners.
You do this to all the stations.
For all the woes in the world.
Hey, you speak about satire in the book a little bit. What do you think about the role of satire with these sorts of things? Because I just wanted to say, I kind of feel like commentators like yourself and comedians are the ones who are actually really the only ones who are nailing it at the moment.
Oh, well, thank you. That was softening me up for then the gotcha for the next question. Well, I kind of wish I'd, like, once the book's published and you go around talking about it, I suddenly kind of talk about things like, oh, I wish I thought about that more, when then I could have put that in the book or whatever. So I wish I put more about satire in the book. And I think I'll go back a step, is that I once got exercised. This is all going to make sense. It sounds like I'm a lunatic. You just said out of nowhere, I got exercised or whatever. And what happens is people are writhing on the ground and screaming and being hit by Bibles. And I did too, and I was screaming too. And
that was for one of your documentaries?
Yeah. And when I got back to Australia and I was talking to some psychologists, I thought they'd be going, oh, that's really bad. You see, what happened? That's bad therapy. That's bad because what you should do is do it. That's religion and we're not religious. But they were like going, you know, it's like people get like really, there's a lot of stress and it's like it's good to scream. And, you know, that's a pretty good way to scream, getting an exorcism or whatever. And I kind of feel like comedy, like there's so much madness going on that it's just really healthy to sort of scream, and comedy is a good way to scream. So like in my case, it's like in inner city Melbourne, and I kind of turn up to this rally, and you know, in this crossroad in the Melbourne Central Business District, where there's like nice cafes and a wine shop and a theatre, suddenly there's like riot police, hundreds of them, people, skinheads walking around with swastikas on their heads, and then like people marching around. It's like it's mad, and then the world go bigger in the world. There's like Islamophobia, and you hear about that, and then there's terrorism. And like what happened in Manchester? It's like, how are we meant to be like not absorbing all this madness and it affecting our kind of emotional state? And so therefore it's good to scream. And I think like this book, which is sort of like doing a, is like just is a healthy way to scream, which is a bit different to how people often look at satire, because they think satire is about taking scalps, like scalps off the heads of like conservative politicians and stuff. So they'll like talk about Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart, and they'll find like some little example of like, oh, and then this politician had to resign or something, because, and they'll make out like that's the point of satire. And I just think that's like not necessarily at all the point of satire. Like on 2 weeks ago on Q&A, there was some annoying guy in the audience going, oh, but now that Donald Trump's in power, there's no need for satire. And it's sort of like, oh, satire, like there's no point because like you can't bring down governments with satire. And like I just don't think that's the point of comedy, is to bring down governments. I think it's to keep us sane as people. And it's like yes. I mean, if you want to bring down governments, fine, but I just don't think it really does it that much. And there's a bit of, you know, on the right, there's it like bean counting. It's like, oh, the purpose of art is about money, and if you can't say it made money, then there's no point to it. There's like this left-wing bean countering, which I imagine a lot of Radio Adelaide listeners are in, where it's like, it's the same as that, but it's about ideology, where it's like, oh, prove to me, John, that this book changed something. And it's like, if you can't, it's like, what's the point? But I think, I don't know, I think it just speaks for itself. I think it's like having an argument about whether comedy is healthy or not. A comedy about dangerous, bad things happening in the world is like having an argument over, are hugs good or not? It's sort of like, I'm sure it's like we can have a panel discussion and someone from the Institute of Public Affairs and, you know, someone from whatever, New Matilda magazine, and they can all have a discussion and come up with some really clever argument that, like, the downside of hugs. But everyone just knows that, like, comedy's good and laughter's good. That's my answer.
Hey, thanks so much for joining me today,
no,
John.
Thank you.
John Safran, absolute pleasure to have him in the studio. He's the author of Depends What You Mean by Extremist. I highly recommend that thought-provoking book.